Why has Bill Curry been your hometown Ford dealer for nearly 60 years? It starts with one of the industry's best lifetime warranties for new and pre-owned vehicles, enhanced by 10-year roadside assistance and free maintenance for a year. Also included are nitrogen tire fills, F-150 and Super Duty bedliners, paint and fabric protection, and more. Add an extensive inventory and concierge customer service, and it's easy to see why Bill Curry is still Tampa Bay's first family of Ford. On Dale Mabry, a mile north of Raymond James Stadium.
All right, welcome to the free stretch here on JoeBucksFan.com, brought to you by Bill Curry Ford. I am Bobby Fenton, recording on this Labor Day weekend, Friday morning. So whenever you're listening to this, that's your frame of reference. And oh man, do we have a lot to get to today. We are jam-packed and jelly-tight. Of course, the Bucks completed their preseason with a win over the Cowboys. They finish at 3-1. We'll get to that. That was Thursday night. We've got all kinds of stuff going on with the league, getting ready for the opener. That'll be this coming Thursday when the Bears host the Packers. In between now and then, we got tons of college football. We got a hurricane on tap. We got it all going on right now. So thank you for joining me. One of my favorite times of year is right now. And of course, it's always when you got the end of August, really now it's September, and we got one more day left in August, but September, October, November, those 3 months, and really December through the Super Bowl, that's the time of year that I wait for all year. And there's always different things all year long to keep you interested. I'm not one of those people that doesn't see any point to the other parts of the year, but this is what it's all about. So thank you for joining us today. And thank you to our friends at Bill Curry Ford, where right now, as always, any car on the lot, you want to go over there and check it out in person, you can do that. You want to go to the website, you can do that, BillCurryFord.com, that's C-U-R-R-I-E. But any of them, whatever it is you end up getting, looking at, anything like that, pre-owned, new, used, they are all covered by the nationwide lifetime warranty. That's on every single vehicle that you could buy there. It's unlimited years, unlimited miles. And what that means is literally, like when you buy a car from Bill Curry Ford, it blows an engine 4 or 5 years later, you can bring it back to Bill Curry Ford, all right? I mean, that's what the lifetime warranty means. Plus, you get 10-year roadside assistance on top of that, so you don't have to pay for AAA or anything. And you get your first-year complimentary service. You get oil changes and all that, just bring them in. It's all taken care of at Bill Curry Ford. You get the whole thing. So again, go to the website, BillCurryFord.com, and check it out. You can see all the inventory there, or you can go down there in person, or over there in person, depending on wherever you live. It's a mile north of Raymond James Stadium on Dale Mabry Highway, where it's always been, and it's just north of Hillsboro on the right side of the road if you're coming from the south, on the east side of the road. You can see Sean Sullivan, the GM there, fellow Jesuit High grad, good friend of mine. Mention my name, mention the free stretch, mention Joe Bucks Fan. You'll get the Joe Bucks Fan discount. And again, check all the inventory out before you go if you want to on the website, BillCurryFord.com. Thanks to them. And I had a blast on Sunday at the Fantasy Draft with Sean and with the rest of the Joe Bucks Fan crew. Then we took a few days off. I did a show on Monday. Watched the Bucks game last night. And so now the preseason's over, and there's a few things. I mean, we can look at it all encompassing. We don't have to just focus on the game Thursday because there really wasn't a ton there. Although, I always say, you know, people make fun of these things and say, oh my God, how do you watch the fourth preseason game? And I was watching some of it. I admittedly flipped around. You know, there was a lot going on Thursday night. There was the Bucks game against the Cowboys, but there was also Coco Gauff over there at the U.S. Open, which was really, I mean, that's a great story. She's 15. She had a little run there at Wimbledon, and now she's into the third round at the U.S. Open. I was watching her match. I was watching a ton of college football, of course. Stayed up for the Holy War, BYU and Utah. I mean, again, maybe I need to get a life. Maybe I need more things in my outside life that make this other stuff mean less. But man, it's just so much better. Like on Thursday morning, I woke up all day long. I was in a good mood. Knew we had Bucks football that night. Knew we had college football that night. I mean, just having sports on TV and particularly football on TV just makes me a happier, emotionally healthier person. And perhaps, okay, that's a flaw. I don't know, but that's the way I feel. So at least this time of year, all's well. And so I didn't watch every single play of the game, but like I always say, and I say this the last night of the high school football season or when the college bowl games are going on, or in this case, the final preseason games, which the entire league played on Thursday night, all 16 games, there were a lot of people who are going to be unemployed by Saturday afternoon, almost a third of the currently employed league. And there's a lot from that group that is never going to pull a pair of pads over their head again. And it's really personal. Like, it's so, when you just watch it on TV, and again, if you're just a fan of a fourth preseason game, whatever, I get that. I'm not saying it's entertaining just on its sheer face, but, you know, a lot of guys playing for their lives, a lot of guys who aren't going to ever do it again, not necessarily all who realized that last night, but some probably did. And, I mean, it's a sobering thing when you think about that. And so looking at the roster, and we'll talk about the roster a little bit, as, you know, they do all the cuts at once. They used to do waves of it, if I remember. You know, you all remember how it'd be. Oh, the first cut down, the second cut down. Now they just do it all by Saturday. They'll have everything down to 53. So I don't think there's a lot of drama with the Bucks roster. And, you know, there's always a few back-end spots that make a difference. It comes down to special teams. It's, as far as important people that will play a big role in the Bucks season, I don't think any of that drama is going to bear itself out in the next couple days. But let's talk about what we know. We'll go position by position, not necessarily on who's going to make the roster and who's not going to. I'll just go position by position here on what we know, what we learned, or what we could make of any of the preseason performances. So we'll start with quarterback, of course, and Jameis Winston is the starter. And he had an okay preseason. I mean, he didn't play a ton, which no starter like him is going to, who's been around for a few years. But I thought he looked pretty decent in the times he did. I mean, you know, if you look at his overall performance, I'm never going to, like, try and glean anything about the regular season from the preseason that's good. You know, it's one of those things where it's either bad or there's no news when it comes to the preseason. But Jameis did what he was supposed to do. He didn't do anything to alarm us, which is the main thing. Again, that's the absence of bad news is more important than any actual good news. And so when you look at the quarterback position as far as the preseason goes, I think what was more telling was Ryan Griffin's performance versus Blaine Gabbert's. Of course, Gabbert hurt his non-throwing arm, although that's supposedly, and Bruce Arians said, it's not as bad as they had feared. He was around one Buck place this week, so I don't think there's going to be an issue there. But there was even a chance, some people said, that they can only keep two quarterbacks and that Ryan Griffin might not make it. I think given both Gabbert's injury, even though it doesn't seem to be as bad as it was, and the way Griffin performed in the preseason, I think that all three of them will be there. And I think Griffin is your number two quarterback, personally. I mean, I never have been a big Blaine Gabbert guy. Now, obviously, he has experience. You know, he's a guy that if there's an injury and you have to turn to Blaine Gabbert, it's like, okay, well, we're not just putting some guy out there who it's like, oh, my God, you know, this guy, can he even do this? We've seen Blaine Gabbert, but that's why we know that he really can't. He's not that. I don't think he can do it. I think I'd rather see Griffin, who has never played a down in the regular season but has an extensive resume in the preseason. I would rather see him as the number two quarterback than Blaine Gabbert. I don't know if that's what the coaching staff or Bruce Arians is thinking or not. Either way, I think all three will be here. Running back, okay? So the whole thing in the offseason was, oh, man, Ronald Jones is going to be so much better, dude. Like, trust me, dude. Like, Ronald Jones last year compared to this year with the new coaching staff, he's going to be way better. Like, that was the whole running theme. And you know what? I actually agree with it. Ronald Jones had a good preseason. And as far as him versus Peyton Barber, I mean, Peyton Barber, I think, is technically the number one running back right now. But as far as the actual volume of touches and the way that they're both used, I don't think you'll see that much of a difference. And Dare Ogunbowale might have outperformed both of them. Again, it's the preseason, so I'm not going to say that he's ahead of them. But, I mean, you look at Ronald Jones, and I was talking about this with Sean Sullivan the other night. Sean's the GM. Let me tell you something about Sean. He's the GM of Bill Curry Ford. So you're thinking, oh, well, whatever, he's the sponsor. He's just, you know, Bobby brings him up, he's the sponsor. Sean could come in and do a podcast on Joe Bucks Fan just as well as he runs Bill Curry Ford. I mean, the guy's unbelievable. He's an encyclopedia. He studies this stuff. He's probably doing that right now in his office somewhere. Actually, we will have Sean on at some point. But anyway, I was talking to him about Ronald Jones and, you know, how misused he was last year. And, you know, Sean noted, and it's true, out of USC, Ronald Jones was not a guy who was a third down back type. His weaknesses, if you want to call them weaknesses, he just didn't do them. He wasn't a pass catcher out of the backfield. He only had, I mean, you can count on one or two hands how many catches he had at USC. You know, wasn't a stand and block guy. Those are things that aren't natural to him or weren't natural to him. It's not what he did in college. So when he got to the Bucs, that's what the Bucs tried to do with him. They had him on the jugs machine at practice, like working on pass catching. He was completely put out of his element by Dirk Cutter's coaching staff. Now, whether you think that was because Dirk Cutter didn't want him and Jason Light did, and Cutter, you know, almost put him out to pasture, whatever it is, Ronald Jones, in addition to being met behind the line of scrimmage over half the time he actually got to do the thing he was good at, which is running the ball, aside from that, was asked to do a lot of things he wasn't good at. So, yeah, I think you'll see a big difference under this coaching staff with him, and in the preseason that seemed to bear itself out. He looked good. He and Barber don't seem all that much different, and Ronald Jones does have a lot of talent. I mean, there's no question about that. He didn't get drafted for no reason. So we'll see. But as far as the running back position, the two pleasant surprises there were Ronald Jones and then, of course, Dare, who can do the third down things. He is somebody I think you might even see, and not just a guy that's going to make the team, but you might see him in spots, like third down spots, because he can stay in and block and do that well. He does know how to pick up guys coming through. He can catch passes out of the backfield. And he ran the ball well. He did everything well, really. So Dare's in there, maybe Andre Ellington as well, but the big story of the whole preseason at running back was Dare and Ronald Jones. And so we'll see how that plays out as the season goes on. Barber, again, is the starting running back in official name, but there may very well be not that much difference in the actual way that they're used or amount that they're used, and we'll just see how all that plays out. But Jones made some big strides as a runner, probably because he's good at running and was asked to just do that type of thing. And then that brings us to the offensive line. I'll get to wide receiver and tight end in a minute. The offensive line, and we talked about this extensively on our show earlier in the week. So it's pretty well set as far as who the starters are going to be, and it hasn't just been last week's show. It's been all these shows about how we got the same guys. The right guard's the only one who's different. Caleb Benenox back to tackle, which he's way – again, another example of the coaching staff last year. And not just the coaching staff. You can blame Jason Light, too, trying to put a square peg in a round hole because Benenox should never have been playing guard. And he's much more suited to tackle, so he's back doing that. Kappa, though, like I told you, you know, there's a reason Benenock was where he was last year, and it's because usually the backup ain't much better when you have an issue like that. So we'll see if it gets better. You know, I'm not going to go nuts on him again. I already did that a few shows ago, but I am concerned. If you go to joebucksfan.com, which I know you obviously are, you know, Joe, and this is one of the places where Joe and I diverge, because the Joes think the offensive line thing is overblown. If you look at the performance numbers of the offense overall, it doesn't point to an offensive line that's struggling as much as everybody makes it out to be. And I get all that, but I mean, we've watched the offensive line, and I've watched Jameis Winston in particular trying to evaluate him, and it's hard to do because there's people breaking through all the time. I mean, to me, that's just obvious. I don't care who you are or where you're coming from on that. And again, we saw it in the third preseason game. Admittedly, that was just one slice of one part of an otherwise, you know, I don't want to say meaningless, but an otherwise not very telling preseason. And if it had been the only time we'd seen that, I'd say, oh, well, you know, it's preseason. Like I said last week, everybody's like, oh, well, think about how much differently they would have schemed for the Cleveland defensive front if it was the regular season. That's true for everybody. That's true for the Cleveland defensive front would have schemed more for our OL, too. But they just stud on stud, head up. They ran through our guys over and over. And then people try to rationalize, oh, well, if you look at this one play, this one, here's what happened. And on this one, it wasn't really Dotson's fault because the guy did. I don't want to hear it. There were people in the backfield every damn down. And if, again, if it was only one preseason game, you could let it go. But that's just the continuation of a trend that goes back a couple of years where people are always in the damn backfield. So I don't know why y'all think there won't be people in the backfield once the real games start. I hope I'm wrong. I really do. But I've been seeing Jameis Winston take snaps before he even sticks his back foot in the ground to set the throw. There's people there. Running back, same thing. Why is it going to be different? Why is it going to be different? Now, here's one reason why it could be different, okay? I'll answer my own question. Because, like I said before, a bunch of people are getting cut. The guys you see with the Bucs aren't necessarily, I mean, the starters are. But if you look at the back, who expected to be the backup linemen are, and it just depends, but you know, right now, I guess what? You've got, well, you got Smith, Marpet, Jensen, Kappa, Dotson. That's your starting five. Benenock's still going to be there as a tackle. Earl Watford, probably one of them. And then who? I don't even know who else. Okay? But whoever it is, other teams are going to cut guys. Then they may be deeper teams at offensive line. Those guys may be better than the people who are already penciled in to make our team, even though they're getting cut from other teams. So maybe they get help somewhere. And look what the Patriots did. And this is why the Patriots are so smart. And I can't remember the guy's name. I should have had it in front of me on Twitter. The Patriots, instead of playing this big free agent game and competing with 31 other teams to try and get guys once they're cut, you know, they made a small trade the other day. I can't remember the guy's name, but it was with the Ravens for some offensive lineman for an undisclosed draft pick. They probably liked him. They probably realized the Ravens were probably going to cut him. And so instead of just, oh, well, we're going to wait and save our draft pick, which the draft pick probably means just nothing, they said, well, here, we'll just give you the draft pick and you give him right to us right now. We don't have to worry about any free agent stuff or any other teams trying to poach him. And the Ravens are like, yeah, we'll take a draft pick. We're going to cut him anyway. Although I would, if I was any coach, any position coach, any head coach anywhere else in the league besides New England, and New England's trying to get guys I'm about to cut, I would go back and maybe, you know, I know these coaches are like sociopathic guys who spend like 22 hours a day watching film and don't do anything else and have no life and sleep in their office. I would go into my office and maybe just try and take one last look-see at the guy I'm getting ready to give to the Patriots. Because if I'm about to cut him and they're like, hey, don't even cut him. We'll just give you a draft pick for him. I'd be like, well, let me see if I'm wrong about that, because there's got to be a reason. You know, I would check that out. Not that the Patriots are all knowing. They make mistakes too, but they seem to be pretty good at that type of stuff. So anyway, Bucks aren't doing anything like that. They will be in the free agent market for cut linemen though. And that's one thing I could see that maybe makes a difference. Although, again, I'm not terribly enthused about the offensive line. Moving on, wide receiver. You got your top three set. It's Evans, it's Godwin, it's Breshad Perriman. After that, like we said before, you know, there's been some runs at things from other receivers on the team, but I think at the end of the day with Bobo Wilson and Justin Watson both contributing the way they do on special teams, and when you get down to like fifth receivers, that's probably more important than their actual ability to play receiver. I don't think Watson did much. I remember Watson from the preseason like dropping a pass. I'm trying to think of what else. But he didn't do much as a receiver in the preseason. And there was a point where it looked like maybe he might be in a little trouble. But end of the day, he's still a contributor. He was the second, or he might have been the leading tackler on special teams last year. But if not, he was one of the top two. And that's a really big deal with, you know, in his position. So if you look at the other wide receivers who are even being considered, you know, everybody talked about Scotty Miller, who was the sixth round pick out of Bowling Green. And a lot of people, for whatever reason, he's like a pet favorite. Oh, is Scotty Miller going to make the team? I mean, he could be on the practice squad. He can make the team. I don't know. I don't think it's that big of a deal. I'm not, you know, caught up in it. And Spencer Schnell, who did have a big impact, what was it, the first preseason game against Pittsburgh when he had the big game? Yeah, he's another one. But other than that, I don't think there's much to look at there with the back end of the wide receiver core. I think it's Watson and Wilson, their special teams guys, and that'll be that. Tight end. Now, that one's interesting because, again, you know, we only got O.J. Howard. People are all saying, trade Brate, trade Brate, trade Brate. He's really good, and we don't really need him because we got other guys. Well, maybe, maybe not. You know, Brate is still valuable, and I'm sure if they got a deal for Brate that they really like, they would do it, but as for now, he'll be on the roster with Howard. O'Claire got hurt. Now, here's the thing. Everybody's like, O'Claire, what's he ever done? Well, first of all, he plays special teams. But second of all, he blocks. Tanner Hudson, okay? He was the only player. He just missed leading the league in receiving by like 8 yards or something like that. But he was the only player in the league to catch 3 touchdown passes. There was a couple of running backs, I think, who had 3 touchdowns, but he was the only one with 3 receiving touchdowns in the whole league. So what to do with him? You don't want him to get scooped up by somebody. If you put him on the practice squad, any other team can have him. Do you keep 4 tight ends? With O'Claire hurt, maybe you do. But Hudson's blocking is bad, folks. Like, that doesn't mean he couldn't learn. You know, he's young. But excuse me. Like, watching, there was a couple times the other night. I mean, his blocking is not good. Like, he's got upper-level receiving talent, but that's why he's not a lock. So if he could block, he'd easily be somebody they'd take over Eau Claire. But in the meantime, you know, Eau Claire's hurt. See how bad that is. That's your tight end situation for there. So that from the preseason, those are things I got from the offense overall. Now, again, not a ton that we didn't already know, but some things came out. You know, I'm not there as a coach every single day of the week, but I don't think there's going to be a ton of surprises there. Now, as far as the defense goes, you know, overall from the defense, and again, they were so bad last year that we're going to be saying, hey, they seem better this year because they have to be better this year. But in the secondary, we'll go from back to front. You know, over at safety, first of all, I mean, the thing with safety right now is Justin Evans' question marks. You know, last night, and I'm recording this again Friday morning, last night he was supposed to play, even though it's the fourth preseason game, just because he's been hurt. And so it's like, okay, we're going to let Justin Evans get out there, prove he's ready to go, and he'll be the starter, right? Then he didn't play. Everyone's like, oh, man, is Justin Evans going on, like, IR now? What's going on with that? And Rick Stroud on his Twitter said, no, Justin Evans is still going to be on the regular 53-man roster. They held him out last night because they wanted to wait a little bit longer, but he's not going on the injured reserve or anything. And if you know, the new rule, you can put him on the injured reserve now. If you do it early enough, you can get him back for, like, the last month and a half of the season. Whereas if you do it after a certain number of games, then they're permanently out for the year if you place them on IR. So they were talking, oh, they'll put them on IR now, get them back later. No, they're not doing that. He will be in there. So it's hard to say with him how effective he'll be because he hasn't done much in the preseason, but he is close to being back. And then elsewhere at safety, if you look at what they have there, I was really impressed with Jordan Whitehead in the preseason. I think anybody who watched the games was. That's not like something secret that I saw that nobody else did. But it's still probably Mike Edwards who will start. And then MJ Stewart, you know, he's been back and forth. Is he a nickel guy, you know, slot corner? Is he a safety? Remains to be seen. Sean Murphy Bunting didn't have a great preseason as a corner, so, you know, I don't know what their plans are for him at nickel and all that. But, you know, going by what we saw in the preseason, it's hard to answer the real questions about this secondary. And that's, like, for me, Vernon Hargraves. Is he a number one? Like, he's a good... If you told me we had a stud corner and Hargraves was number two, I'd say, all right, cool. But is he a number one guy? He's going to get to play the way he likes to play again, which is another thing about the old coach. You know, he's not going to be playing 10 yards off guys when that's clearly what... The Bucs had this thing where they draft these guys that are good at things in college and then ask them to do different things about that once they get to the Bucs. You know, like I talked about with Ronald Jones a few minutes ago, same thing with Hargraves. Like, hey, he's a good roll-up guy, you know, that's what he does. Well, let's put him 10 yards off and just take away all the things he's good at and just ask him to do stuff that he's just not in his comfort zone and not in his skill set. So he's back to doing things that should be in his skill set. But is he a number one, you know? He's not across from somebody else. He's not across from somebody else who's number one. He's number one. So we'll see about that, and we'll see if Carlton Edwards can make a big step forward this year. He's definitely a starter for the Bucs, but that doesn't mean he's a stud. Carlton Davis, excuse me. And so, you know, he's going to have to make... I mean, he was okay last year, but he gave up his fair share, as did everybody on the Bucs defense. We'll see what he can do. Sean Murphy Bunting, not a great preseason, but again, I wouldn't worry too much about it yet. Don't know enough. And Jamel Dean did look pretty good, so we'll see about that. Then up front, Vita Vea, you know, injuries again. I'm worried about Vita Vea. Not that he won't be, I mean, they're saying he should be back maybe soon, or if not, he won't miss whatever. He's hurt all the time. He's one of those guys, it seems like he's real, you know, I don't want to say injury prone, but real prone to getting injured, if that makes any sense. Yeah, so I'm worried about him, not just this particular injury, but I'm worried about him long term, just always being, oh, is he hurt? Is he not? Maybe he can play, maybe not. I hope I'm wrong about that. Sue, so far, as advertised, not a ton from him in the preseason because of, you know, again, them being pretty easy with the starters. But what he did looked pretty much as advertised. I think he'll be fine. And that's on the inside. Then on the outside, again, this is where it's all going to come down to it, folks. I mean, what kind of pass rush can this team get? Carl Nassib's great, but, you know, that was like a breakout type thing last season. What if there's some regression to the mean? I mean, you know, he was second on the team in sacks. Not that sacks are everything, but he's not if we had a second guy ahead of him, which is, I guess, what JPP was supposed to be, and it was him and Nassib, okay, but Nassib's the guy there. And on the other side, if you look at Shaq Barrett, I mean, he's one of the few guys, I guess Jack Sitchie at linebacker is another one, who wasn't just some grinder trying to make it in the fourth preseason game. He's going to be a guy the Bucs use. I think Sitchie will make the team too. But you've got that at linebacker. Outside linebacker I'm talking about. Noah Spence will make the team, but as we said last week, if he was going to be what we hoped he'd be, he'd already be it. I think he's just a back-end guy. And maybe he ends up showing that upside that we all thought he had, but I wouldn't count much on him. Yeah, of course, inside linebacker, they're set. Levante David and Devin White. Deion Buchanan's got some nice depth there behind him. Mike Minter was pretty good this preseason. And, you know, we'll see what else they all are able to come up with as far as they're pretty. Linebacker's a deep position for them. I think, like I said, Sitchie will be there. And Devontae Bond was good this preseason as well. So, again, those are things you look at the preseason. You say, okay, that's what we got. Matt Gay's going to be your kicker. I thought Pinion was kind of average. I wasn't really impressed with him as punter. And, I mean, my big thing with punters, even more so than their distance, is can you drop balls in when we punt from midfield and not stick them in the end zone? I hate when guys put the ball in the end zone from like the 40 or the 50. So, you know, we'll see about that with Pinion. And it's definitely Matt Gay as the kicker. So there you go, folks. I'll say this much. You know, your preseason record doesn't matter, they all say. I'd rather be 3-1 than 1-3. And there are at least a little bit of numbers to back this up. If you look at the last 11 Super Bowl winners, I was reading this earlier, and I am not saying the Bucs are a Super Bowl contender, but if you look at the last 11 Super Bowl winners, they all were 2-2 or better in the preseason, going back to the 2008 Steelers, who won their Super Bowl here at Raymond James Stadium. So that's, you know, it's better to be good than bad. The Patriots, if you go back to all their Super Bowls, I think they were at least 3-1. Maybe 2-2 a couple times. They were always good in the preseason, going back to even 2001. And if you look at the Bucs themselves in the years they had their most success, in 99, when they went to the NFC Championship game and got ripped off on the Bert Emanuel play after the Ricky Prohl play, all right, they were 4-0 that preseason. The Super Bowl season, they were 3-1. So again, I'm not trying to tie that to this preseason. I'm just saying I'd rather win than lose. And I think it's at least a little bit important, like Bruce Arians said, to learn how to win. Even if you're on the sideline, not in the game. Like, it's just it's an attitude that permeates everything. So again, I know I'm reaching for positives, but that's what I saw there. If you want to get a hold of me, it's very easy to do. Email me, bobbygameday@yahoo.com is my email address. That's BobbyGameday at yahoo.com. And if you want to get me on Twitter, same thing, @BobbyGameday. Oh, and the fridge schedules. So I finished the fridge schedules, and for those of you that don't know this from last season, what I do every year, and I've done this since going back to when my grandma, you know, when I was a kid, my grandma used to put all the football schedules on her fridge for all of her teams, which her teams were FSU, the Bucks, and whatever high school my dad and my uncle were coaching at the time. And it always meant football season to me. So I started to take it to another level a few years ago. I type them up now on a nice 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper. I use color logos for the team and for the opponents. It's really nice. It's a nice schedule. If you'd like a nice big schedule that you can stick on your fridge or in your cubicle or your garage or whatever, and you can like to write the scores in, like I always write the score in. I'll put win or loss and I'll put the score. My grandma always used X's and O's. She used X for win and O for loss. So I do that too, just to remember her. But whatever. It's got all the stuff. It's got all the way through the playoffs, all the key dates. Pretty logos, fun to look at. Like every time I walk by my fridge, I end up stopping and just looking at the schedule for a couple minutes. And after a few weeks, I've got it memorized anyway, but I still like looking at it. So I can give those to you. I did it last year, had a ton of people email me saying, Bobby, give me a fridge schedule. Now, if you want, you can still do that. BobbyGameday@yahoo.com. I'll send it to you. I've done the Bucks. I've done the Gators. Those are the ones I always do. And I did USF this year because I was getting requests for that. If anybody else wants like FSU or even any other school, you know, if I have time, I can try and do it, but those are the prime ones. I'm trying to put them on the website, joebucksfan.com itself, and I'm talking to the Joes about that. That way, anybody can just go to the website. It's just a Microsoft Word file, or actually, it's a LibreOffice file. and you open it, print it, color printer recommended, right? Because you got to get those beautiful logos shimmering on your fridge. And then you can even edit it too if you like certain things about it or want to change certain things, but it's got all the information you'll need. And then you can print it out yourself. But if you want to email me directly, that's fine, bobbygameday@yahoo.com. I might be a little slower to respond depending on how many requests I get, but I will get you a schedule before your team kicks it off. If it's college, that's this weekend. But either way, email me, I'll send them to you. So that'll be a lot of fun. Couple things I wanted to mention here as we get ready for next week, but a couple stories from this past week. Never said something about Andrew Luck. It's been a few days now. It's an old story. I'm only going to say this about Andrew Luck. You know, a lot of takes flying from both sides this past week. And Andrew Luck seems like a genuinely good guy. And every single person in any profession has the right to stop doing that job the moment they don't want to do it anymore. Even sport, yeah, you know, people say, oh, well, sports are different. They are different. They do affect other people because people care about these things. But it's still one person's life. And whatever you are out there, whether you're a doctor, lawyer, accountant, teacher, whatever the hell job it is you have, doesn't matter. You could say that day, and maybe give them 2 weeks' notice, I guess, and say, yeah, I'm not doing this anymore. You don't have to, like, that's it. Like, you don't have to do it if you don't want to do it. And that goes for Andrew Luck as well. But there is, again, the caveat, like I just said, sports are a little bit different. And a lot of these sports writers that are criticizing fans, I would not boo Andrew Luck like they did. They shouldn't have done that. But a lot of these sports writers criticizing fans, I think sports writers sometimes have been sports writers for so long. And I guess everybody starts out liking sports as a fan because you wouldn't get into sports writing or commentating or anything like that if you didn't have a favorite team somewhere along the line. I mean, it has to start somewhere. Nobody just starts being neutral and just liking sports just for sports. We all have favorite teams, and that kind of puts the claws in us, and then we start following the sports in a broader sense. But I think a lot of these sports writers sometimes forget what being a fan is like. And so it's perfectly natural when your star quarterback, who got hurt seemingly for no reason, nobody would tell you how he got hurt anyway, and then missed all this time for what didn't seem like that big of an injury, and you're like, dude, are you ready to play yet? For Christ's sake, get back on the field. And no news, no information, everything's very vague, everything's very hush-hush, and then he just retires. Yeah, they should be pissed off. I mean, I don't blame him for being pissed off. And again, Andrew Luck seems like a good guy. I am not criticizing his overall decision to retire, but did I think less of him when I saw that scroll across the bottom line? He's retiring. Did I roll my eyes a little bit? Yeah, I did. I was like, oh, he's retiring now. I mean, my God, did he step in a bear trap and they still haven't been able to remove? Like, what the hell? Get hurt, get healthy, get back out there. Like, that's always been my mentality about everything with sports. And that's because, again, we look at sports. I mean, the way I look at sports at the professional level, okay, again, quick math, 32 NFL teams, there's 53 active roster spots, right? So what is that? You know, however many thousands of people, it's close to 1,700, right? If you do 32 times 53. 1,696, there you go. Quick math. So when I think of the NFL, I think it's supposed to be the best 1,696 football players in the world. It seems weird that there's somebody who's in that top 1,696 and isn't playing. Like, why aren't you playing, you know? It should be the best 1,696 guys available to play the game. They should be playing it. Like, who's willfully not playing it when they're in that top 1,696? Or with, you know, MLB, where it was a 25-man roster, 30 teams, so that's 750. That's supposed to be the 750 best baseball players in the world. There's not supposed to be somebody in that 750 who's willfully not playing. Everybody's trying to do it. Only the best can do it. So that's how I think of it. So when one of those guys is clearly in that top, whatever the number is, and it's just like, nah, I'm good. We're all like, what the hell, dude? Like, you know, he's already got all the money he needs. Most of them do. But it's like, yeah, like, you know, but you have to think of it. And I've said this before on shows. When I play Ultimate Frisbee every Sunday morning, or I play tennis or pick up basketball with my cousin, Markham, who we play all the time, or me and my buddies play pool volleyball at my buddy's house, whatever it is. I'm like really competitive. I'm too competitive. Sometimes I have a temper and I get mad and it's like, it completely is me. I go out, the other day, lost a set to my cousin Markham. I was up 5-2 in the set, and I was up 40-15. So I had two set points at 5-2, blew the two set points, ended up losing the set 7-5, didn't win another game in the set, just lost the ability to hit the tennis ball. Like, I kept hitting it into the net, unforced errors. I don't know what the hell happened. And I ended up slamming my racket and breaking my racket. It wasn't an expensive racket, but I broke my racket on the ground after the set. That's the fire that burns in me for that. I don't get paid to play recreational tennis with my cousin. It means absolutely nothing. Not a single person in the world, up to and including my own wife, gives a single crap I come home, hey, I won. And she's like, whatever. She doesn't care. Nobody cares. Nobody cares. And yet that fire burns. Like, I was so mad. But that's because I'm not making money. If you paid me like $1 million to play, I would no longer care about the outcome. I just want the $1 million. So what if I lose? You know, I wouldn't care. Like, I always think it's a testament to how competitive these guys are that they can make the kind of money they make and still stay competitive. Because as a fan, I'm competitive. Like, I get, I live and die with the Bucks games every week, the Gator games. And I realize if I actually played for the Bucks, I'd probably care if they won or lost less than I do as a fan. Which sounds twisted, but isn't it true? What about you? Like, if I played for the Bucks, if I actually got to play for my favorite team, I would care about my own performance and my career much more than the actual outcomes of the game. I know this sounds terrible, but I'd be like, all right, if I play well, I'm okay. You know, even if the team loses, I played well. I got mine. You know, I think I'd think like that. I was never like that, like in my teams, like Little League, high school, or you know, even recreational stuff. Like I said, I'm very competitive, winning and losing. But you add money into it, make it a career, and all of a sudden I probably would think more about it as a career and as a financial thing. So I get it when these guys do that. Like I said, I give them most of the credit that I give them because they show so much competitive fire. Because especially if I was one of the really big money guys, you know, Bryce Harper or something like that, you know, in baseball, or you know, someone like Luck in football. And it's a lot more personal for quarterbacks because they're judged on their team's wins and losses. But let's say I was a wide receiver or something. And I was making $15 million a year. I had a good game. But all right, we won, we lost, whatever. You know, I know that sounds terrible. That's probably how I'd be. So I get Luck can leave, whatever. But don't leave and think, oh, how's anybody mad at him? That's as a fan, I'd be really mad. I'd be more mad as a fan than I probably would as somebody who's more closely. Like, the closer your ties are to it, the less you probably care. And when it's just a fan thing, especially when it goes back to your childhood, in a sick, twisted way, it means more. But that's what sports is for us. I mean, it's two things. Why you listen to this show? Why are you on Joe Bucks Fan? Or any other media outlet following whatever your favorite team is. Why do you do that? Okay? One, you do it for entertainment. It passes the time. It's entertaining. It's a diversion from whatever your regular life is. And two, it's an outlet. It's a competitive outlet. It's an outlet for maybe some unhealthy emotions. I'd rather you have unhealthy emotions about sports and get overly upset about the Bucks losing than have those emotions about real life things, you know? So it's kind of an outlet for us to put all those feelings and maybe get too wrapped up in something that really doesn't affect us. But that's okay, because it's all fun and games, and we can, you know, once it's over, we can set it aside and go back to our regular life. Like, that's what sports is at this point. You know, it does not actually matter. Like, there's not a patient lying on the table that's going to live if the Bucks convert this 3rd and 8, and that's not going to live if they have to end up punting. You know, it's not. It's fine. It's just, it doesn't affect your life. And yet we put more stock into it, I do at least, than things that don't affect my life. Or excuse me, things that do affect my life. Like, there's real life consequences, and I don't really make a big deal out of them either way. I stay on an even keel. But then sports, I'm all over the place. It's like a roller coaster. So anyway, that's my thoughts on the whole Luck thing. It's not about Luck himself. It's about people who care about these types of things, and I would give them at least give them a couple days leeway. If you boot him in the first 10 seconds after hearing that news, the way it was going around the stands as a preseason game was unfolding, and it just was raw and fresh, fine. A week later, if you're still talking garbage about Andrew Luck, maybe tone it down, maybe back it off, maybe reevaluate a little bit. But in those first few hours, it's raw. I mean, I get it. I'm not going to blame people. There's nobody really in the Bucks organization comparable to Andrew Luck as far as the place they hold in the organization's legacy or history or anything like that. So I wouldn't. But if there was, I could see feeling that way. I honestly could see feeling that way. Email me if you want to, BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com. on Twitter at Bobby Game Day. The other thing I want to get to real quick before I do my Hurricane Manifesto, Carly Lloyd. So Carly Lloyd is a soccer player on the U.S. women's soccer team. And she's really good. She's one of the best. I don't follow women's soccer that closely, but I know who she is. So there was talk, there was a video that came out of her making a field goal from 55 yards. She's got a very strong leg. She's a hell of an athlete. Now, caveats. One, she took a kickoff-style run-up to it, not the 1-2 punch like a regular place kick. So she got a running start. And two, obviously, it wasn't live. No one was trying to block it. And she did hit from 55 yards and went through the uprights. It looked nice. So there's been talk, and she's been saying herself, and she says that a couple of NFL teams have reached out to her about possibly kicking for them. She'd be, needless to say, the first woman to ever play in the NFL. So after this all came out, again, out of the woodwork from both sides, there's the people, you know, girl power, absolutely. It's important that people realize that girls can do this stuff too. And if she's one of the best 32, she should be out there, which I agree with. Fine. Then there was the other side. Well, how's a woman going to kick? What if it's blocked and they have to run down the field or on kickoff or something, or they have to make a tackle? You can't do this. And then the girl power people come back, you know, oh, well, you know, take a look at yourself. You really need to evaluate the way you look at, you know, sexism, blah, blah. I don't care about all that. I'm a big believer, like I just said about Andrew Luck, right? NFL, 1,696 players. I want the best 1,696, male or female. In this case, place kicker, I want the best. That's 32 of them, so it's not, you know, all the positions combined. I want the best 32. Michelle Wee or Annika Sorenstam, when they were playing in the men's golf tournaments a few times. Remember that? That was fine. I did hear Michelle Wee saying, well, I want to play from the women's tees but still play in the men's tournament. No, no, no. Tournament's open to the best people. Same rules for everybody. You're one of the best people under those rules, you play. Male, female, don't care. I'm a big believer in that. My issue with the Carly Lloyd thing is she, I mean, why would anybody think she'd be one of the best 32? Because she made a 55-yard field goal. If she's got such a strong leg, and she does, wouldn't it follow that there are many, many other soccer players? I mean, how many collegiate soccer players, let alone, and I guess the guys in Europe don't have incentive to go to the NFL because they have that, you know, they're higher up on the hierarchy in their leagues than they would be in the NFL. But how many male college soccer players, or even lower level, like, you know, guys in the MLS here or whatever, could probably also do that? So just because Carly Lloyd did it doesn't mean she's one of the best 32 kickers in the world. One of the best 32 football kickers in the world, I should say. Plus, I heard this news and I thought she was like 20-something. I don't know a lot about her. And I looked it up and she's like 37. So, I mean, surely even if a woman was going to do this, there are better candidates than her. And I know she probably has a particularly strong leg for a girl, for a female, I should say. And if she really was one of the best 32, I don't think the, you know, covering kicks on kickoffs or block kicks is a big deal, because even some of the male kickers barely stick their nose in that stuff. So that's not an issue. I just have a hard time believing, at 37 especially, and given that all the male players that could probably do the same thing she could, you know, where she comes on the ranking list of kickers who aren't currently in the NFL that could probably do it, she's probably pretty low. So we'll see if she's for real. And she even said, she's like, I'm not going to take these two offers now. This is something I'm focusing for 2020. But she says, and I believe her. I'm not saying I don't believe her, but she says two teams tried to see if about her, you know, at least coming for a tryout. And she wants to prepare a little more and really make a thing out of this maybe next season. And if she actually is one of the best 32, give her a uniform, get her going, period. I don't believe she really would be, though. And just because she made a 55-yarder, I mean, that was a big deal like 20 years ago. But nowadays, you know, I think there's probably, let me tell you a story real quick. A guy named Jeff Babcock. Jeff, if you're listening, or if anybody that knows Jeff, tell him to come listen to the podcast. Jeff Babcock was a teammate of mine at Jesuit High School, a good friend of mine. I was a backup wide receiver. He was our starting place kicker and punter. And he actually went on to kick at Colorado State. And he was a good football player, too. Like, he could play the regular positions. He wasn't just a kicker. But he was a hell of a kicker. And I was a year older than him. But we were good friends. And one day we're messing around after practice, and it was just him and me out on the field, Corral Memorial Stadium over there on Himes, just down the street from Raymond James at Jesuit. and we were messing around. This is probably my senior year, his junior year. And he was like working out, like hitting bombs. I was holding a couple for him. And he moved it, moving back. So he goes for 58. And this is high school. He's a junior in high school. And this is, again, this is probably 1997, I guess. So this was when it was still, you know, now these kids even are hitting these long. But back then, like, you didn't see guys making kicks that long, even in college. And this wasn't from a tee. This was from an actual place kick off the ground. He goes, 58, I got this. And I said, Jeff, if you make this kick, I will buy you a steak dinner. So I'll buy you a steak dinner if you make this. And this is, you know, again, when I was young, I didn't have a lot of money. It was my high school. You know, I probably got my money working at Adventure Island over the summer. So he goes back to 58. Instead of holding for him, I wanted to stand under the goalpost to watch the ball if it went through or not. So we got those PVC pipe, you know, that little holder thing, that tripod that just holds the ball for you. He sets it up 58 yards. He was on the 48-yard line. I mean, no, you know, reservations there. Sets it up. I go back under the goalpost. And he absolutely stuck this kick from 58 yards and had a couple yards to spare. And I was like, Jeff, God almighty. I bought him a steak dinner. We went to Outback. Or I got him a gift certificate to Outback. And he, 58 yards. And that was back then. High school kid. I'm sure there's plenty of high school boys, let alone college kickers, let alone college soccer players or whatever, that could do the same thing. So I have no problem with the gender aspect of this thing at all. I just want the best 32 people. In my pro sports, I want the best in the world at that thing. That's why they get paid a lot. If it's her, fine. I don't think I believe that it would be her. So if this ends up happening next year or not, we'll see. But I wanted to say a little piece on that. So one more thing with the hurricane. You know, I haven't mentioned the hurricane yet. Living in the Tampa area my whole life, I've been through a lot of these hurricanes that come approach the state of Florida from either our direction in the Gulf of Mexico or from the other side. And if you're like me and you've lived in Tampa your whole life or even any amount of time, you know they never actually affect life here very much. We've had, you know, like Irma came through. There were some trees and stuff down and stuff. Did Irma affect your life in any way? It didn't affect my life. I mean, after it was over, like I've never in my life, you know, especially when I'm out of state or talking to people from out of state and I say, oh, I'm from Florida, people always want to go, oh, hurricanes, man, you guys have to deal with hurricanes. And I was like, well, you know, I'm almost 40 now, and in my entire life, a hurricane has never had an effect on my life more than 24 hours. You know, I've never had a hurricane affect my life. I think I lost power once for a couple days when Charlie came through, and even Charlie didn't actually come through. It missed like they always do in Tampa, but the power went out at my apartment. That's it, like that. So, I mean, people a lot of times don't understand that. If you're a Tampa person, you haven't actually been through a hurricane, like through it. Like my wife's from South Florida. She was actually in Andrew. Like Andrew went over her head. That's being in it. And so she's a lot more like, oh, hurricanes. And I'm always like, yeah, hurricanes, whatever. You know, I always get excited for them because I like the energy of it. I like how there's something going on. That's just the way I am. And I know it's a bad thing to say. Hurricanes do a lot of damage. There's loss of life. There's, you know, people lose homes and stuff. I'm not rooting for hurricanes, okay? But I'm just telling you, I get naturally excited about them. So this week, this one here, Dorian, whatever happens this weekend, you know, the main thing I always say, and this is just my advice, I'm just one guy who's never actually had a serious issue with a hurricane, get yourself prepared, you know, get all the things you need, whatever it is, water, batteries, your candles if it is, anything like that, food. Secure your house any way you I always think boarding up your windows is a little much, but, you know, some people want to do that. If it makes you feel better, go for it. And then hunker down, watch some football. The good thing about these hurricanes is a lot of times they happen during football season. Irma was like that. This one should be like that, too. And you know what? Just be ready. And it's not like a grain thresher that's going to come over your head and chop your head off. Like some people are, I remember Irma, like all these people leaving Tampa. I'm like, why are you leaving Tampa? Like, you don't need to leave Tampa. Like, you need to secure your house. If you're in a flood zone, maybe go a little bit inland to a relative's house or something. But you don't need to, like, go to Atlanta. I had friends go to Atlanta and stuff. I'm like, what are you doing? Like, that's the dumbest thing in the world to me. Like, secure your house. If you're in a flood zone, go somewhere inland. Other than that, you don't got to go anywhere. Clog up the roads. Deal with all that. I would never leave Tampa if a hurricane was coming, ever. And I live near some water, but I don't live in a flood zone. I'm pretty well above sea level here, and Anyway, this one especially, this one's coming from the other side of the state across land. So this one's not going to be a flooding issue. This could be a wind and rain issue, but storm surge and things like that, even if it does end up coming close to Tampa, isn't expected to have the flooding that a lot of times comes with these things. So don't stress out. Just stay calm, stay cool. You know, I'm not going to pretend that it's a good thing, but try to have fun with it. You know, a lot of times people get together, or especially if you have family in town and you all want to be at one place, you know, have a party, have a little fun, as long as everything's taken care of and you're safe. That's always been my thing with it, and hopefully everything is okay by next week. I don't think that we're going to have any issues with the Bucks home game on Sunday, because whatever happens by then, this is supposed to be something that has come and gone earlier in the week, and let's hope it ends up not being a big deal in any way, shape, or form. Although thoughts are, you know, with anybody who ends up being, you know, South Florida's looking at maybe a lot more action than we are, if we have listeners down there or anywhere else. You know, good luck to everybody. Whatever you do, like I always say, just be prepared. Get the hay in the barn, and after the hay's in the barn, don't worry. There ain't nothing to worry about once the hay's in the barn. Can't control it. So with all that said, thanks to all of you for listening. Thanks to my friends at Bill Curry Ford for sponsoring the Free Stretch. Thanks to the Joes for giving me this platform, as always. Enjoy the Labor Day weekend. I mean, it's a holiday weekend. It's going to be great, and the weather should be really nice up until, you know, whatever it is, Monday or late Monday, early Tuesday. So be safe, have fun. We'll be back next week for our show leading into week one, getting ready for Bucks 49ers. A lot of good college football this weekend, though. And stay safe. And in the meantime, wherever you are, good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks.
Why has Bill Curry been your hometown Ford dealer for nearly 60 years? It starts with one of the industry's best lifetime warranties for new and pre-owned vehicles, enhanced by 10-year roadside assistance and free maintenance for a year. Also included are nitrogen tire fills, F-150 and Super Duty bedliners, paint and fabric protection, and more. Add an extensive inventory and concierge customer service, and it's easy to see why Bill Curry is still Tampa Bay's first family of Ford. On Dale Mabry, a mile north of Raymond James Stadium.